Meeting of Trade and Economic Development, Saturday, July 2nd, 1977, at 6:30 p.m. in Hearing Room A, House Bill 3333, Energy Facility Siting Council.
Meeting will come to order. First item of the meeting was called for the specific purpose of dealing with House Bill 3333. The members have before them copies of amendments as prepared by the governor's office. I would like to ask the members to look also at a hand engrossed bill which should accompany the amendments. The amendments begin on page 3 of the bill, section 4. The amendment says the council shall, and then the language would delete if deemed appropriate, and then continuing on the word set. The new language would include safety and other necessary and appropriate. So the language then would continue adopted as rules. So the sentence would read, the council shall set safety and other necessary and appropriate
standards.
They're coming back to standards. Adopted as rules, etc., for the construction. The other amendment would begin on page 5, and it speaks to sub B, which really is simply a new version of sub B. As I understand it, the amendment would speak to the proposed energy facility being superior to the other alternatives reasonably available to the applicant for meeting and the need of the established paragraph A, which speaks to the demand for the energy to be supplied. I'd like to have the members look at those amendments. I'm going to propose the adoption of those amendments, and if there's no objection, why we'll order those adopted. Senator Brown, you are Senator Bowes, alderman on the committee, and I understand your position regarding the bill. Senator Groner, have you had a chance to look at
yes.
the amendments? Do you have any objection to them? If not, we'll order the amendments adopted then. This time, I'd move the amended bill back to the floor if due pass. Is there objection to that motion?
I'd like to be recorded no.
Senator Whipple is a no vote.
I am voting in Senator Bowes' position.
Okay, and that earlier was recorded as a yes vote. Personally, you have indicated you may oppose the bill on the floor. Okay, the motion carries and the bill is back with a due pass amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I understand you have a bill on Lane County Transfer.
Would you identify the bill, which do you know which number
no,
that
I'm
is?
Not sure what it is. It came in today.
I've
got to be next door and write it back because they're going to adjourn.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, while you're looking for that bill, could I make a comment?
Certainly may.
We had a hearing the other day on House Bill 2687, and then I've subsequently had a chance to reread and more intimately familiarize myself with the bill. That is the PUD bill, and I was concerned that the election provisions had been carefully drafted and that work had been done through the Secretary of State's office. I'm satisfied that is the case, and I'd like to move 2687 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator, I'm aware of that bill. As we are well aware, we had a hearing on the bill. At that time, we proposed, we listened to the proponents. I'm going to decline the motion to move it out at this time because I feel that we're not sure just what's going to happen yet tonight, and I want to have a chance to consider further hearing on that bill. We may, after tonight's session, I may call another meeting to consider that bill.
Mr. Chairman, I had brought up the Lane County bill,
yes.
which is 3268.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And at an appropriate time, I would like to make a motion to.
Now, that's a bill we haven't had a chance to have a hearing on it yet. I don't recall. pending the fact we haven't had a hearing or a chance to consider it, I decline the motion at this time, knowing that we may have further hearings after tonight's session, and so I would decline a motion on that bill.
If there's an opportunity, we will have a hearing.
If there's an opportunity, I'd like to put it up, but at the present time, I just can't take the motion to move it out without a hearing on the bill.
Very important, Lake County appreciate hearing.
Okay, we'll do the best we can. No other business, we're adjourned.
Mr. Chairman, may I make an announcement?
Certainly may. We're adjourned.
Trade Committee, Monday, July 4th, Happy 4th of July, 1977, Hearing Room A, 1:25 p.m. Hearing and work session on House Bill 2451, House Bill 2560, and House Bill 3196.
First of all, to look at two bills that I think are totally non-controversial. One would be 2451, which would give employees of a state officer upon a written request to have money from the salary deposited, made payment to a state or federally chartered saving and loan association, state chartered bank, national bank, or mutual savings bank. I guess it's totally discretionary if I read it correctly.
On the part of the employee.
On the part of the employee. This would be in addition to any payment made to PERS, I guess, if they feel they want to have their employer take more money out and deposit in a savings account of some sort. That's their discretion. Discussion or opposition to that bill by members?
What's the cost implication for writing an additional check?
Bob, do you have a clue on what that is?
Yeah, it was indeterminate in terms of the fiscal impact.
Chairman, when we discussed the salary subcommittee, the executive department indicated it would cost them about $4,000 as startup charges, one time only, and the remaining cost of doing it month to month would be negligible because under the amendment to the bill, all these checks would go into the automated clearinghouse, which would go to the individual banks and savings and loan associations.
Oh.
So they would issue only one check a month.
Okay.
Instead of, that number. there was a little programming adjustment that we required at the beginning, and after that, nothing.
What's the deed for the bill?
There's the witnesses. I'm not going to call the witnesses. Maybe there's both the state employees and the savings banks right there. Why don't you ask them, Senator?
So what's the need for the bill?
You could, Mr. Chairman.
Bill, maybe you could talk.
Currently under state law, a state employee can ask for to have a portion of his or her salary deducted for United Fund, group insurance, labor dues, parking lot fees, Series E bonds, and deposits to credit unions. And all the banks and the savings and loans are asking is that we be put in the same position as the credit unions and these other groups.
Oh, this is the level.
This is the level playing field, Bill, Senator. And
all you have to do is say that word.
And again, as Senator Attia points out, it's strictly discretionary. Thank you.
Do you want to speak on this, Frank, about the playing field?
No, I think I've been said. Just to say that we support the bill, and it's kind of an added bonus, and there really is no reason why it shouldn't happen. Those startup costs and costs are negligible, and we've had considerable support for it from the employees.
Mr. Chairman, I would only like to say that I am very much disappointed in Mr. Barrow. I certainly would have taken advantage of the opportunity to indicate that all those employees who do this would probably earn a little bit more interest because their money would be earning interest quicker than if you left it up to themselves to do it 2 days later.
This is up to the will of the committee. Blaine, is that
no objection?
No objection. Motion is carried and the bill's out. 91 or 3196, I believe, is a bill that got hung up in the Ways and Means Committee, and it's an appropriate measure to permit the continuation of the use of foster parents, and I think that's appropriately said. I did have a question concerning the amendment. Do I read the amendment correctly on line 27 and 8? It's scratched out or scratched in, depending on how you look at it.
The theft itself shall not be considered damages is the new amendment to the bill, or is the amendment made by the House.
There's a gentleman from Children's Services here. Briefly, can you just give us what the consequences are? You don't have to give us any prepared statement. We don't have time for that.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Glenn Knickerbocker with Children's Services. This bill would expand the present tort liability coverage offered to foster parents to include willful and malicious damages done by foster children. Right now, the tort liability coverage only covers their negligent acts. This is a very important piece of legislation to the foster parents. They did advocate on the House side to have theft coverage included. It was included by one of the subcommittees, but was taken out by Ways and Means because of the added cost. We're estimating the cost of this bill will be about $20,000, and CSD will absorb it within its already legislative approved budget.
If the bill doesn't pass, what happens?
They will continue to have tort coverage for negligent acts on their part, but they will not be covered for the willful and malicious acts of the foster children. As you're probably aware, many of these foster children, because of the particular situation, do occasionally become involved in vandalism and other types of things, and right now the foster parents are held liable for that.
Have you had any foster parents indicate that they're going to discontinue serving as foster parents, or is that a myth?
We're advised by the Foster Parents Association that we're losing foster parents every day because of this. It's very hard to tie it down.
Have there been any cases, any action taken against the foster parents?
I'm not aware of any.
Members of the committee,
I think it's a good one. I think if there are some people who don't even offer themselves for foster parents, and of course we don't know about those, we really need them. I think we don't want to have any impediment just offering themselves as foster parents.
Senator Whipple, do you have any objection to the bill?
I do not.
Okay. It's out. Do pass.
Thank you.
I would ask Jay Gould, is he still around? Jay, could you give us a brief rundown? We're going to have just a few minutes to look at this cigarette tax bill. I want to know, ask him in fairness to both sides, to try to get some impact. This bill is probably appropriately one that should be in Ways and Means, and I've asked Jay to give us a brief impact of where the counties stand in terms of what this legislature has done.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the Ways and Means Committee held several hearings on aid to counties and finally, in a somewhat of a compromise situation, adopted the following four programs. They passed out, do pass Senate Bill 20, which provides for a payment to counties of $32 for each circuit court judge position on July 1st, 1977, and $40,000 for each circuit judge position as of July 1st, 1978. The total cost of this package is $5,272,000. The next item was Senate Bill 5565, wherein the state, this bill provides that the state shall pay 50% of the cost of mental health emergency holds. This is where a person is alleged to be mentally ill and is being held pending court determination as to whether or not he actually is. The cost of this program was $1,059,500. They also passed out Senate Bill 465, which provides for a payment of 25 cents per capita to counties each year, with the money to be dedicated for public health services within the county. The cost of this program was $1,215,000. The final bill that was part of the package was House Bill 5034, which increased the payments for deputy district attorneys from the present $5,000 per year. The cost of this package was $286,000, with a total cost of increased state aid to counties of $7,832,500.
Jay, I guess we're just under a call. I have one more question for you. You heard the whole situation. Do you feel that the counties were given adequate consideration for in this biennium for their financial needs?
It's my personal thinking that this is the case, Senator. I'm sure that the counties are not happy. I'm positive that they would like to have more, but based upon the available funds, it seemed that to the members of the Ways and Means Committee that this was the best that could be done. I would add that we're now down to a beginning ending cash balance of approximately $39 million as compared to approximately $190 million going into the beginning of the month.
Okay, what I'm going to do is recess rather than adjourn so that we can have some time to at least consider. We're under a call, I understand. We're recessed until time now, so the later whenever that'll be.
because I was born in that.
Who's preparing, bringing those amendments down?
Rich Mines.
He'll be along shortly. There is, maybe Senator Atiyah, let's reconvene. Do you know the thrust of what we're doing, or do you want to wait to see those amendments?
The concept that's going to be discussed is mandatory school board elections for a tax base once every 2 years. I think the Constitution says it can be either at the primary or general election. And the concept is to put that into statute that would say that they would need to have an election to update their tax bases once every 2 years. That's the idea.
Mr. Chairman, could we look at the Van Poole bill? Lynn Denny is here.
I would not be opposed to looking at the Van Poole bill.
What number is that?
Is that 3150? Is that correct? Why don't you explain to us briefly what the Van Poole bill does?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Dennis Moore. I'm administrator of the Public Transit Division, which was formerly the Mass Transit Division of the Oregon Department of Transportation. House Bill 3150 was designed to facilitate van pools. A van pool is basically 11 to 15 passenger van composed of people who are commuting to work, commuting to job training, or basically commuting. It's generally regarded as an energy conserving means of moving people to and from work. Generally, they're organized through an employer, whereby the employer agrees to match up anywhere from 7 to normally 15 people who are traveling from the same general area of a community or communities and working at one locale. The employer puts the folks together, often provides the vans, and the one employee agrees to drive the van to and from work at no cost to the employee if the employee will get numerous other people to go on a trip with them or her. There is a very extensive federal program available to buy vans. TriMet is in the process and has received federal funds to implement a van pool program in the Portland metropolitan area. What 3150 does, basically, is to exempt vans under three circumstances from regulation and the weight mile tax of the Public Utility Commissioner's office, because they're very complicated to administer, and they would go in and out, often would travel in and out of, shall we say, regulated territory. The cost, actually, we foresee that if we do have a van pool program, House Bill 3150 would save money in terms of administration and regulation. Consequently, we are recommending approval of this measure. We think it's got great energy savings potential.
Okay, members of the committee, do you understand the Van Poole bill?
I have only a question. I'm concerned that when you get as many as 15 people in a vehicle described as you have, that you are now dealing with public safety of a large number of people. And to exclude them from any kind of regulation does bother me. Now, we're not just talking about carpooling now. We're talking a bus full of people. Actually, we regulate in the state of Oregon school buses, many of which are the size you speak of and even smaller, and they're regulated.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tia, I think we passed a bill earlier this session out of the Education Committee which excluded buses of 15 or under that are transporting school youngsters to extracurricular activities.
From regulation? We did?
I believe we did.
I can't be positive on that, but I do remember a bill of that nature, Senator Whipple. And to your question, Senator Atiyah, Your point's valid also. If the bill's going to have some controversy, I don't want to take it up.
I don't really plan to make any comment before the body, but I don't think that I want to vote for it. I may have voted for the other one. I'd have to go back and check. But it does, I understand what you're driving at, but I begin to worry when 15 people, and you're talking about 15 passengers plus a driver, 16 people, the way the bill apparently reads from it.
If I may respond, Mr. Chairman, generally they're less than 15. The largest van built is a 15-passenger van, which includes the driver. That's built by the Chrysler Corporation. Others are normally 11 to 13 passengers. We have in a van pool a community of interest we often don't have under the normal circumstances. We have an employer who has a vested interest in his employees who would screen that employee who's going to drive very carefully, provide and make sure that employee is making sure that the equipment is well maintained and safe. We're looking for a responsible person that the employer would want to have a very good record. I think you'll find that there's a regulatory process at work here under a little different circumstances than the state per se regulating. Other states have done this. Numerous states, five come to mind, have exempted, and we have not had an insurance or a liability problem, at least that has been reported to the industry.
Mr. Chairman, I won't fight it, but even when you get into it, you say all the nice things that you say, and I don't question they're going to happen, but it will not happen by the passage of this bill. Now, you write into that, we need people and their concern and their employers and they're providing this for their, you know, all the things you just told me, you know, I'd go for it. I didn't say that in the bill. It says you exempt them from regulation, which means they could not be neat people and do the same thing. And I don't plan to make any issue out of it, Mr. President and Mr. Chairman. You know,
thank you.
I'll move without due pass.
Okay, is there objection to that motion?
Yeah, I
just record people. T is a no vote. Okay, the bill's out. Let's take up the amendments to 3156. Rich Munn, did you help prepare these, Rich? There's Barbara. She came in also.
Is nobody here from the education office?
We went through yelling, hear ye, hear ye.
Pardon?
We went through the halls yelling, hear ye, hear ye.
Better that way.
May I make a comment before so the committee understands that I had intended of making this post motion in 3209. The bill moved out of committee before I even had a chance to. I voted no out of committee but voted for the bill because I had some amendments I wanted to propose. It was on the conference committee. Again, I made all the suggestions on the bill, and then all of a sudden it moved, and I didn't get a chance to add another proposed amendment. I still think it's a good idea to at least be considered, and now with that background.
The amendment, I think, just in effect guts the one-page bill you have, 3156, and inserts into it a requirement that if the school district is successful in having the voters approve an excess levy, then in the next even-numbered year, you have to submit a tax base election. So it just gives as one of the eight election dates you have in the even-numbered year when a tax base can be submitted to the voters. It allows the school district or requires the school district to submit a tax base election and allow the people in their district to decide if they do want to approve a new tax base or if they want to continue operating under the excess levy process.
I do need to ask you,
Senator Attia.
This would only affect a school district that prior to July 1 had an approved budget in excess of the tax, in excess of the tax base?
Yes.
Is that the way it reads?
Yes.
So the following year, Well, better tell me again that exactly.
Okay, only in the even-numbered years in the primary and general election can you submit a tax base issue by Oregon's Constitution.
Yeah.
So it would require that if the district then in the odd-numbered year is submitting and is successful in getting voter approval on a levy in excess of their tax base, then in the even-numbered year, that is one of their elections, they have to submit a tax base election.
It's in the calendar year following July 1 of fiscal year for which a levy outside the tax base is approved by the voters. So if you approve a levy outside the tax base, say for the fiscal year 77-78, during the calendar year 1978, either at the primary or at the general election, you would be required to submit the question of establishing a tax base to the voters.
Okay, difficult for me, but that's what I intended.
Okay, I have a question then, Barbara. The amendments have a Section 1, and then there's a Section 16.
Section 16 is the section of House Bill 3209.
I see, so that should become a Section 2?
That requires the school district to make its budget and levy its taxes. No, Senator, that's the way we number them when we don't have an ORS section for the section that we're amending.
Okay, I follow what you're doing. In other words, we're amending, really, by this proposed amendment, 3209.
True.
And we're calling it Section 16 of 3156.
It is Section 16 of 3209, and we're calling it the amendment to Section 1 of 3156.
I see. Kind of thick, but I see now. Okay, having said all that, is there objection to those amendments? Hearing none, we'll order them adopted. Is there any opposition to the bill in its amended form? Okay, that bill's out. Okay, that brings us to conclusion. I need to resolve the issue on the cigarette tax. The committee had a briefing on what legislative council's done. The counties are going to have to, at this point, understand that your budgets were heard before the Ways and Means Committee. The city's budgets were heard. The Ways and Means Committee made a decision based upon what I assume to be a position of equity. I feel that we are not in a position at this time to consider further the cigarette tax. I regret that, but that's the best we can do. I think it's kind of like a father making a decision at Christmas and giving a couple of gifts, one to each children. This committee now is being asked to take another look at a bill which has a substantial fiscal impact, and I don't feel comfortable doing it at this point in the session, so I'm going to have to drop the bill. With that, we're adjourned.
interesting. This is the Conference Committee on Senate Bill 819, Monday, July 4th, 1977, in Hearing Room A at some time after 9:30.
Subject is Senate Bill 819. The Senate refused to concur basically because of the language provided in lines 4 through 6 on page 3 of the bill. And I would move that we reinstate the language as it passed the Senate in Ann Gross, Senate Bill 819.
That's fine, Senator. We have no objection to that. Or at least I have no objection.
Go ahead. If there's no objection, that's so ordered.
Where's the report?
Okay. Bill's moved the floor. Is there any disagreement with the bill? All concur?
Conflict amendments.
Oh, I'm sorry. Conflict amendments to Senate Bill 819, Ann Gross, as amended to provide for the amendment on page 3 of the amendments under sub H to provide for the amendments that we made.
Okay, this is
They're in here. 1 year is in this these amendments.
That's the part that goes into the other bill.
Okay, this is then to
well, okay, but we're adopting. See, we're adopting the
conflicts of Senate Bill 846. Is that correct, Senator?
Yes.
All right. I move the conflict amendment.
Okay. That is being deleted because the Senate is adopting the House.
That was deleted.
As I understand it was deleted.
Correct, it was.
Yes, it was deleted. So we're adopting the House amendments of 1 year on line 10 instead of 6 months, similar methods on line 13, and deletion of under one ownership on line 16.
That's fine.
Okay, is there objections to those?
No objections.
Being none.
What's the reason for that amendment?
Under one ownership, this one, the case involved in this, what apparently brought the bill to the legislature, involves three parcels of separate landowners. And they would cause more damage, to be more potential for abuse, it is felt now, if it said under one ownership, because they'd have to set up three individual operations. Okay, if there's no objection, all sides concur, and we'll move them to both sides.
With a bunch of people on it.
Justify $500,000 for one bond issue?
Well, here's the other one. There's
all the other ones doesn't make that hoot a difference for the one time it's on. That was just to get the three or four in there all at once to justify $500,000. But that's over $1 million for elections in 1 year for two issues. Doesn't make sense.
Proposed amendments to this?
Okay.
I would, we have some amendments drafted that have the gas tax on the May restores the gas tax, just deletes reference to House Bill 2140. And then I'm willing to, Mike, anything else?
Mm-hmm.
This is just a... we can only go back to the first half amendment. That's exactly
yeah.
what that is.
Yeah, that's
there's
what
no
this is
reference
doing.
To 2140. The bill that I got has reference
yeah.
to
2140. Oh, section 10-6. Well, this is the one that ties it together.
There should be no reference whatsoever to House Bill 2140 and 3329. And if at least that's what the House has sent us down here to do. And I'm willing to sign off on anything that's acceptable to you.
Well, I'd like the House version with the language that says on line 12, and any other measure submitted to the people at the special election on September 20, 1977, by the 59th legislature.
That'd be mine, Kent, for basketball.
That means you'll get SGR 1 and SGR 32.
Right. Well, I want the House version in all of the cases, which restores the September 20 line.
Mike and maybe Fed.
I'll be back. They might find a double check and make sure that I'm all right on the 30th. I'm just doing anything that you want to do, regardless of in the fall, as long as the gas tax is restored.
No, the July 1 figure was for a fiscal year for which they're having their election, and the odd numbered year. That's what that July 1
it could happen any time during the even numbered year.
During the odd numbered year. There's a whole series of election dates, you know, we have, Gary, and they could pick any one of them at any time during that fiscal year. You see, they have an election, they'll have an election in May.
I've forgotten the dates.
Even. But, you know, there's about five or six dates. They can have them any time, but the fiscal year that they're dealing with is, some of them had them in November, but it's for the July 1 fiscal year, and for the next June 30th date. If they're successful, then they have to go for a tax-based election in the even number year. So it's just those that do that. Now,
how does it affect those that don't have a tax base and have to have an election every year?
There's no effect to them. Most school districts go excess, and they have to be successful or they don't continue.
Okay, but
this would involve most school districts.
Yeah.
If they turn the last one down, they go on, and they'll have another election eventually after their next budget election.
What you're saying, though, is in those districts that do not have a tax base and have to have an election every year.
Yeah.
Every even numbered year, they would have to have an election.
Yes, probably, because they'll probably have to go for an excess. Well, they have to go for an excess, and it has to pass. Okay. Now, our thought was that we would start making some inroads in school districts that do not have tax bases, and we may not be successful the first couple of go-arounds, but they'll start dealing with that subject, school districts will. And the people will start talking about it. And we might pick up two or three here, or half a dozen there, or whatever, as time moves along, and we'll start getting school districts now with tax bases. And I feel that a lot of school boards are reluctant to go out because they're dealing with their budget. They're reluctant to go out for tax bases, but they will say, well, the legislature said we have to. So, you know, kind of bucks them up a little to go out for it. What I think will happen, only a guess, is that let's take Beaverton School District, 1970, this year, and they went successfully for a excess levy. Next year, they're going to have to go for a new tax base, and there's only two dates they can do it, primary and general. I think what might happen is that they would come out, and this is not necessarily true. Okay, they will come out sometime early in the year for their excess levy, which they can do to protect themselves. And then in November, which is the next time they can do this, they'll go for a tax base because they have to by law. And eventually we'll get them with tax bases. Now the thing is that the people will make that decision at their own district level, except we say they have to have the election. They can say no, that's no.
The proposed tax base would be just any figure they come up with under the normal procedures establishing a tax base.
Any amount.
Now, it's as simple as that. The thinking that we had was, and one of the, I talked about it on the floor of the Senate, the thing that always worried me is that on all the measures, and I've been involved in this since 69, kind of nagging in the back of my mind that we were saying, you know, statewide, we were going to decide tax bases for all school districts. If Boughton is number one passed, same thing. If the people statewide voted yes, and let's say the Valley could have, for example, laid a tax base on Eastern Oregon, just because all the folks are there and they all voted yes. This way, at least, the folks in their own districts are going to make their own minds up about a tax base. And the point really is it's there, they're going to have to run through it, and we'll start picking up school districts with tax bases. It's up to the voters, but it's there. It is required that they do it, that's all it's required. But it has to be under that set of circumstances.
In a district that doesn't have a tax base at all, if they turned it down, they could conceivably be voting on one every other year.
That's right. But each time, you see, they'll get a shot at a tax base, and once they make it, they can operate for a while anyway before they have to go back to the voters.
One of the advantages of this process is that every time you have an election, more and more people understand what the process is that we operate under in Oregon. And that's one of our problems.
So the one thing we are doing, we are demanding they have a tax-based election, which I think is good. And I think some school boards will welcome it. They just say, well, the legislature said we had to. So they'll do it. And we'll start picking some up.
If it would be possible just to get on the record what some of our friends from the educational community think of this, Chris or Ozzy?
I'm Ozzy Rose, the school administrator, and I approach this subject to a number of people that we ought to voluntarily try to have everybody go at one time and see if we could start a statewide campaign and generate it. And I get some yeses and some no's. I personally would like to see it and see us put a concentrated educational effort on one date next spring or next November and see how many we can pick up. Some of our people aren't going to like being told anything. That's a standard argument, but I am hopeful that you will go with it. We've gone this far. I think we could pick up some.
Chris?
Like the same comment, our position to the legislature was that to pass the constitutional provision, it ought to be a statewide measure to update all school district tax bases. So we've got a little problem objecting to the idea that the school districts should. We'll have some school districts that don't believe they need it in practice. In practice, not, but we don't have any public budget elections. We've got others that do. I don't know if I understand it fully, but if it goes into effect, I would like to see it in effect for the 78 primary days. So that would be the first shot at it. And secondly, I would feel possibly more comfortable if there was a sunset date on it, or at least a commitment that the legislature will look at it after two rounds and see whether or not it would be continued. You could sunset it 81 or 83 would be two shots. But if it go out of effect at July 1, 1980,
As the bill is now written, Jeff, I'm going to go into effect with the effect of 78 election.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because the referral backward is that you look at the, if they had the levy this year, that is next year, and that isn't being retroactive, that's just saying we're going to look backward and are making our computation,
yeah,
but it applies to the future.
So that would give us about 330 of the school districts.
Yeah.
In the November
of 78. Chris, I'm elected to insist on a primary election, because I'd like to have them make a choice between the primary and general election.
Yeah, I didn't want to insist on a primary. I wanted to be able to implement it by the next primary.
Well, it would be.
I wanted to use that.
It would be, because this would become effective 90 days after the session, and so...
And I believe under the Constitution, if they adopted one in May of 78, it would be in effect for the 78-79 fiscal year.
Well, if we were to adopt a sunset provision in 83, this would give us three runs at it, and I think it might make it a little more palatable to the House.
Yeah.
Especially if we're somewhat...
I'm not hung up on it one way or the other. The sunset provision, it probably would make it better as far as the House members.
I think practically speaking, it's something that's innovative enough the legislature would review as a matter of course anyway.
Okay.
You
know,
probably. That's right.
Do you see any harm in inserting such a provision?
No.
Is there any, would there be any objection?
Well, I'd like
to get a feel of what we're doing.
Yeah, I got a feel of what you're doing. But I'd like, we got a copy of 3156 up here anyplace?
This is.
That is it.
It
gutted that bill and put that in.
Oh, this language on here deletes everything that was in 3156.
That's
okay,
correct.
That's what I wanted to find out.
That's right. This is the whole bill right
okay.
here. Everything that was in 3156 is taken out.
Okay.
Just for your information, 3156 was the bill that, you recall, that dealt with forest fees, and that counties could decide whether they were going to give 25% or more
or less
to school districts.
Yeah.
And we finally, that bill didn't go very far here, but they got another bill which zeroed in on Curry County and Grant County or something like that, and it passed.
Yeah.
Well, that was what this bill was. It was
okay,
passed by
the
bill.
Anyway, this just deletes everything that was in 3156.
That's correct.
Okay. Would there be any objection to adding, in effect, subsection 2 to section 16 here, or that would have a self-destruct provision in 1983?
No. Brett?
It would be our suggestion, sir, that you would want to refer to the amendments made by the Section 1 of the Act, because you want the other language, the original Section 16 of 3409,
okay,
to survive.
That's right.
Okay.
Well, however...
Yeah, we can write it. I'll worry about how we edit it later.
Yeah. Okay.
That would be what date, 83?
July 1, 83. That takes us through the legislature.
Right.
Right.
I think that's fine.
If we had a report with such language, just could everybody sign off on that?
Yep. And how soon will this come to the House floor?
Well, it better be.
It'll be before quarter after one, because that last time was an ultimatum.
Get down to two measures. This will be the next one.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it could go on almost immediately.
Yeah, we'll just move to just, if we can give us language for that one sentence to be added, and we can Xerox it, we'll kick it out.
Right back.
Okay.
We reset.
Should we wait here to sign it, or do you want to find